On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Afternoons with Andy Marr.
Grab the new hot and spicy buffalo chicken from Subway. And the massive redemption sale. Makita, when power means business.
G'day everybody, welcome to the show. It is afternoons here, 11.16 SEN. Great to be here on this very, very warm Wednesday afternoon, wherever you might be. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to BP. Outstanding work from the great man yet again. Geez, we've got some stuff to talk about today, folks. Mel Jones, fresh from her debut, doing a men's test match. Here, of course, part of the 11.16 SEN team in the studio to talk what was, what is, and hopefully what will be. If you want to join in and talk any cricket, I won't make it blue with this today. I'll get the new number and I'll get it right, and I promise I won't make it blue all day long. 1-300-736-736. For those of you who are smarter than me, that's 1-300-SEN-SEN. See how clever we are? 1-300-736-736. Put that in your phone, chuck out the old one, purge it from your brain so you never say it again, like I will do at least half a dozen times today. Any cricket you want to talk to Mel Jones about, feel free to get on the line and do that. The old SMS machine applies, 0433 98 11 16. Outside of cricket, there's bound to be some footy that will roll up from time to time. There is the massive FFA board meeting tonight. We spent a bit of time with a couple of the consortiums yesterday. We're going to spend some time with South Melbourne today. Bill Papastigiadis is going to join us to talk about why South Melbourne should be one of the two teams, if in fact two get added to the A-League next year or the year after, whenever it might be. Bill's going to tell us why it should be South Melbourne. And I notice there's a lot of really unhappy South Melbourne Football Club supporters out there who feel like there's been some sort of a campaign waged against them. I pick it up from SMS machine traffic that we get here. I see it on Twitter. There's no doubt that there's a sense among fans of that traditional team that there's some sort of campaign against them. And I'll talk to Bill about that and wonder whether the history of this amazing club is a strength or a weakness when it comes to holding those sorts of criticisms and observations at bay. We're going to talk hockey with Blake Gubbers, who's leading all scorers over there, basketball with Corey Homicide-Williams. We've got to talk soccer. Mick Bridges is going to join us after a remarkable Champions League raft of matches last night. We're down to the final 16. There's a couple of unlucky teams that haven't gone through, a couple lucky, I suppose, to get through. Tottenham and Liverpool, principal amongst those. But, gee, there was some football played. Make sure you join in any stage you like. 1-300-736-736. Mel Jones was a superstar. She's always been a superstar in my eye, but she was a superstar with the team in Adelaide, well, from Thursday afternoon all the way through until Monday afternoon. Jonesy, well done. Congratulations on being part of what is a history-making team here at this radio station. Well done.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't know if fresh back is the right phrase. I'm getting a bit weary.
I'm not surprised.
You're a completely different job in comparison to T20 cricket and the likes, and you just feel as if you're on from, you know, 8 in the morning till about 7 at night, but you're on a fantastic test match and with some super people to work with. A lot of fun.
And loads to absorb on the way through. It was one of those classic, and it wasn't everybody's cup of tea, it was mine. We talked about this.
Because it was test match cricket.
It was a slow burn, and it built. There was so much to absorb about it on the way through. When you kind of think about the match just in an environment like this, what are the two or three things that you kind of take away from the game?
I think the first one was, and we've talked about this a lot with the WBBL and women's cricket a lot, pitches. Mm. Get some good pitches in. And Damien Hoff, I think, did a fantastic job with a drop-in. We know that drop-in wickets haven't often produced, you know, good test match cricket pitches. He did a ripper. And what it also did, it made Tim Payne and Virat Kohli really think about where this game was going, because it wasn't your typical fourth, fifth day pitch. So yeah, we weren't getting reverse swing and the like. There was still some good grass coverage on it. The ground itself was a bit slower because of the footy. I think they've relayed it with ryegrass. So all those different elements came into play quite a bit, which I thought was absolutely fantastic. I think we also thought that it was going to be a bit of a battle between the two pace attacks and the two spinners. The bowling attacks looked pretty even on paper, and I think they both bowled about 123 overs each.
Yep.
And then who could stand up with the batting side of things? And really, it was Pujara that was the difference at the end of the day.
And what a he's a reminder of what can be if we. And I feel like we're getting closer to this. I feel like there's a kind of reawakening, if you like, of what a Test batsman is.
Yep.
Pujara isn't the modern day version of Test cricket. You go over and watch IPL cricket. He doesn't play in the short term. He's now almost exclusively a 4 and 5 day player. And
yep.
He's a reminder that it's actually okay to have a player like that, maybe even two, mm-hmm. maybe even three, in your Test 11.
Yep. Well, you look at he's only hit 10 sixes in his Test career.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's played 60-odd test matches.
And he's playing in 2018.
Correct. The amount of times he hit the ball along the ground, you can hardly remember a ball going in the air at any stage. His footwork was fantastic in the sense that he created the length that he wanted to hit the ball along the ground. It wasn't pretty to watch at times, but it was effective.
Yep.
He knew his game plan so very well. He didn't need to waver from it because he, as we mentioned, he's a red ball cricketer. And it was fantastic to watch. I think a lot of people would have learned a lot from the way in which he went about it.
So what does it say from an Australian perspective? Did you have a sense that, I'm an Aaron Finch fan, right? So I'm not advocating.
We
all are, right? I'm not advocating for Aaron Finch to be dropped from the 11 or whatever. But we had a chat about this yesterday, and if people missed the conversation yesterday and are keen to join in again today, and I'll ask you the same question: whether you'd make any changes to the 11 or whether you'd shuffle the order around. We'll have a chat about that in a moment.
Yeah.
So if you want to join in, 1-300-736-736. In case you missed that yesterday, but do you feel like Finch is in as much because Australia, the selectors are keen, A, to have right-left combination at the top, but also to have a goer at the top of the order, that they've sort of become a bit, well, this sort of works.
Yeah, I think that Finch is in because of circumstance more so than anything else. When you look back, you lose your two openers from the South Africa series in Bancroft and Warner. Renshaw then got the concussion over in the UAE.
Yep, yep.
So there you've lost three traditional openers in a sense. I don't know. Warner comes underneath the traditional opener because he does change the game a little bit.
He is the game changer, yeah.
But
yeah.
And then the other openers in and around, I think they always wanted to try and get Finch into the setup too, because everything that happened in South Africa too, in terms of his leadership, and he's just a quality bloke, and
yeah.
That's what we keep hearing from
absolutely.
Justin Langer, is they want good blokes in and around the setup. So it was more circumstance than anything else. I think if you ask most people, you know, I was just chatting to you beforehand, sitting in the media area of the Adelaide Oval, and you sit down and then there's Warne and Border and Gilchrist and Ponting, and you're all talking cricket. And I think most of them would say you would love a traditional opener, if not two, potentially two, in that spot. And at the moment, Renshaw, Burns is hitting runs.
Harris didn't look out of his depth, though, did he?
No, not at all. No, he looked fantastic.
Yeah.
Just really calm, measured, you know, put his shots away, particularly backward of point. I thought he was great in that area. Had time as well.
Yeah.
Wasn't rushed by any stretch of the imagination. He was gutted. You could see it on his face in the second innings.
You know,
and he's
feeling,
got a taste for it.
Yeah, you know that feeling, and you know this feeling. You know that feeling when you know you're in, and then you get out?
Yep.
You get out. The bowler didn't get you out. You get out. Particularly in the second innings when the internal kind of nerves had probably started to settle to a degree.
Yeah.
That was the look that was etched on his face, I reckon, as he got out in the second innings.
Yeah, and there's probably two things there too, is that you've got to give a lot of credit to the Indian bowling attack. I thought their plans were pretty good. And when needed, they kept picking up regular wickets. The other thing with getting in too is you can get in and then all of a sudden the ball's 30 overs and the pitch wears a bit and it's, you know, that second session and things shift again. And that, again, what I think is the beauty of Test match cricket and this test as well, is that you just had to, all the players had to keep readjusting, assessing right throughout.
Yeah, and the conditions waxed and waned to such a degree that even though the ball wasn't reversing the way I think a lot of people thought it might have, there were moments when, okay, now it's over to Lyon and Ashwin. It's your turn now.
Yep.
But then that passed and then it was back. Okay, now it's the front line quicks, you know, and there was just beautiful, unless you're a lover of Test cricket, this might sound like you know, old people talking about the good old days. But there was such a lovely ebb and flow in the game. I just thought it was if every test match was played like that, and they're all different, obviously, but yep. we'd be sitting on the edge of our seat all the time watching that stuff.
It was pure drama and theatre by that last session when you sort of wake up thinking, I think most people would have thought, yeah, probably around tea it's going to finish and, you know, that they'll be well short kind of thing. And then you lose the early wicket and you're like, oh, it could be a bit early now.
Yeah, why not get to
and
it,
then
yeah.
all of a sudden, you know, Lyon just finds a way to work with the tail end. And all of a sudden people are thinking, oh, hang on a minute.
In the back of your mind at any stage, did you think, I think they're a chance here?
You were definitely thinking there's an opportunity here for them to really put the heebie-jeebies in India. Yeah. And you could sense it too in the way they were going about in the field as well. Their slips caught and it was hysterical watching them. Right at the start of the day, they'd be up and they'd almost be walking in with the bowler and they'd be charging forward every time the ball hit the middle of the bat or missed the bat, didn't matter what. Yeah. And then as the day went on, there was less movement and then all of a sudden they were just standing there like a typical slip scorer and that was a really good sign.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you get a sense from where you were and conversations you were having and when you got closer, did you get a sense for the spirit in which the game was played?
Yeah, look, there was, would you say it was niggle? There was certainly chat and banter out there and some questions being laid by Nathan Lyon to umpires about moving in the field and all that sort of stuff. But that is fine. That's the game. Mm. And I thought it was played in fantastic spirits, particularly at the end of the test when you're down on the ground as well. There was, the Australians pretty much left the field reasonably quickly, but the guys that had to come back out for media and all those sorts of things. No, there was a really good feel about it all.
If I asked you, and this was a part of the question that was asked, you know, in the postscript kind of immediately thereafter, but now that we're a day and a half away from it concluding and a day and a half away from the next one beginning, or 2 days away, really, given time differences and all that sort of stuff, but who do you think has more upside in terms of the level of what they produced in that first test? Which team do you reckon has got the most upside to take into Perth?
Yeah, I think Australia's got more room to move and improve, and they only fell 31 runs short. Mm. Now, that was off the back of, you know, some pretty impressive batting from the tail again, but I think that the Australian camp will be pretty confident that they'll assess this test match, they'll figure out, and yes, some people say, well, they should have figured it out from the first innings to the second innings, but there's time now, you know, a few days to be able to look at those areas. Will they change the team? I don't think they'll change the squad. Will they change the order? I don't think they will.
Yeah.
I think Justin Langer's going to stick with Finch at the
you
top.
You think he will? Okay,
yeah,
right.
I've just got a feeling.
Hold your thoughts on that, because I want to get your thoughts on whether that's the right thing to do on the other side. We'll get to a couple of calls. I want to get your thoughts on that on the other side of the break.
Yeah, but I think there's more room to improve for Australia, and I think they will improve. I think there's a lot of talk about this pitch at the new Optus Stadium as well.
Yeah.
I think the curator's already mentioned that it'll be a four-day test, so he's putting it out there. And what I also think is, I don't think Stark was at his best. I think that he probably missed a trick not playing in the Shield game leading in. The run out that you don't want to say test match is a bit of a, you know, a run out, but I think the overs he's bowled there will make him better in the Perth test as well.
And he still wasn't terrible. Like these people expect, the only problem with him is that he's not knocking over the top order.
Correct.
That's the only thing. And that's a pretty big thing, let's be honest. Like
what he's there for.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, there's a bunch of people who want to join in the conversation. Let's get to your calls. 1-300-736-736. Mel Jones in the studio talking what was and what will be when we get to Perth in a couple of days. Murray's in New South Wales and has jumped on the line. Good afternoon to you, Muzz.
G'day, how you doing there? You all good, mate?
Very well, mate. Far away.
Yeah, listen, I just need to ask you a question about who would you think Australia has in the Australian team at the moment that is a grafting batsman that will hold his end up under all duress in the line of, say, Pujara? I mean, personally, I can't name anyone at the moment. Can you? Maybe Hanscom at the most.
Probably not. No one is the same as Pujara, and I think we had a quick chat about that and the reasons why, and I think it is a little bit because of the amount of white ball cricket being played by these guys. I can't even...
Khawaja proved it over in the... hinted that he could do it over in the Emirates.
Yep, so, fantastic knockover there.
Absolutely, and again, he batted time in this test match.
Yep.
He just couldn't bat time and keep the scoreboard ticking over the way he would have liked.
Yeah, and his release and shot to Ashwin was aerial to get on top of him, whereas, again, Pujara, he doesn't give you that chance of being caught.
No.
How many catches were there? There's something like 30, there's the most amount of catches in a test match as well.
Yeah, 30-odd. Yeah.
Pant took 10 of them, sort of thing.
And they'll review that, won't they? The coaching staff... of both teams, and you could see India's adjustment in the second innings from the way they kind of batted in the first was stark.
Yep.
No Mitch pun intended, but they went about it very differently in terms of the shots they were playing to get out. They still got out playing a couple of poor shots, but they did adjust from first innings to second. It'll be fascinating to see how they respond in Perth, the Indians in particular, if it is a bit bouncy, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's why that's the other question for India is that they've got Rohit Sharma in there who didn't do too much and play that woeful shot in the first innings. But they've picked him because of Australian conditions. He's the one guy that can really handle sort of the bouncier pitches. They've picked him also in the lead up to Perth. So some people might say, well, he might not get picked, but I think he will play again because of the conditions there.
So Mars, the best one's probably not in the team at the moment is the big lefty from Queensland who probably can fit that bill. I think a lot of us just want to see him get in the sort of form where the selectors get the green light to pick him again, don't we?
Hit some runs and he might be there.
Look, we'll get a break out of the way. Stephen, Luke, don't go anywhere. If you can stick around, fellas, we want to know what you've got to say. We're talking cricket with Mel Jones in the studio. Your call's on the other side of this. You're listening to Afternoons here on 1116 SEN.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Afternoons with Andy Marr.
Grab the new hot and spicy buffalo chicken from Subway. And the massive redemption sale. Makita, when power means business.
That's who we're here for. The spicy buffalo chicken from Subway. And, of course, that massive redemption sale. Makita, when power means business. Mel Jones in the studio talking cricket. Before this hour is up, I want to talk to you about Elise Perry. And if you've seen her play in any of the early WBBL games and you want to join in the conversation about how impressed you've been by her, when we get there, I'm really keen to talk to you about her, particularly you, Mel, because we've spent a lot of time together talking about Elise Perry. We'll get to that before the hour is up. Steve's in Ormond before any of that and wants to have a chat to you about the great game. Fire away, Steve.
G'day, Mel and Murray. Look, great conversation. The situation that I found, that I took away with from the first test, and maybe I'm being exceptionally biased and I do fall on the sword with that, but at the end of the day, Pujara, what did he score? 250-plus runs for the test, I think it was?
So 123 and 70. So
there you go. Nearly 200.
Yep. 194, was it?
Something like 993, something like that. You keep going. He's scored a lot.
His average is somewhere in the 40s. So if he'd scored his average, Australia would have won the test. So I don't think people need to throw the baby out with the bathwater in relation to our top order and how poorly we've performed. But the other point that I wanted to make was that I saw a lot of synergies with the 2013 back-to-back Ashes series where Australia went to England and were considered useless and absolutely pathetic. And that, I think from memory, that was when Lehman became coach of the Australian side. And the fourth and the fifth test, there was an absolutely discernible change in attitude of the Australians and their self-belief. And I started to see that in that last day of Australia in the last test, that self-belief and all of the, I think they were 40 innings partnerships for the day. So I just think India might be in for a world of pain in the next couple of tests because the Australians aren't intimidated by them anymore.
It's an interesting observation, Stephen. Time will tell whether your observations are right. But I think this is a pretty important thing. You mentioned Justin Wang has talked about Aaron Finch a lot and how much he likes what he brings to the group and the dynamic. For the time being, I reckon that's going to be that's going to supersede to a degree runs. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
if you're not an absolute dead set liability and you just cannot play because you're so badly out of nick, I think they're going to carry one or two a bit deeper than they might have if, in fact, they are key contributors to that dynamic that they're very, very keen to develop here.
Yeah, and I get exactly what you're saying, and I think you're right. I'd love to hear that communicated a little bit because at the end of the day, too, we're all sort of sitting back and we're like, well, Australia hasn't hit 300 plus in their last 13 innings.
Yeah.
So, you know, as the public, we want to support these guys and get them over the line and see them, you know, doing really well, but also winning.
Yep.
So at some stage, if that is the case, they need to try and communicate it in some way, shape or form so that we go, right, well, we're with you then. Yep. We get what you're doing. We get the rebuild. Okay, here we go. But if that's not communicated and we're seeing a couple of guys getting carried through and we don't know why, then that's when people sort of go, well, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah. It's a good point. Yeah.
Getting picked or,
it's a good point. And I feel like this is an open... I feel like that Justin Langer is reasonably transparent.
He's been great with all the media. We had a good chat to him, Jared and I, before day one of the test. And he was exceptionally open and forthright with, you know, a lot of things.
Yeah,
So and I must admit that's been, you know, really refreshing too. And I hope that carries through with the rest of the series.
Absolutely. Luke's in St Andrews. You want to have a chat about the great game, Luke?
Yeah, hi Andy, hi Mel, I love your work, mate.
Thanks. Me or Mel?
Oh,
Mel will do it, keep going.
No, I do love your program, Andy. Mate, I want to give a bit of a sledge to all the armchair critics out there, because talk is cheap. Now, we've got to get behind the team as a whole, as a country. Otherwise, we're going to become a bit of a laughing stock around the world if things aren't bad enough already. At the end of the day, we took 20 wickets, and by all accounts, that is an exceptional yardstick as to a team's performance against possibly the best team in the world. So things are looking good. Things aren't as grim as people make out. So people have got to get behind the Aussie team, support, and just give total, unbiased, undying support like we used to years ago when things were good.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, I reckon. We're here to kind of observe and criticise and celebrate. I think it's all thrown into the mix. But I feel like this is a time to just get behind them for the time. Given what they're going through, you know, post-South Africa, I'll get your thoughts on this after the news headlines, Mel, but it does feel like a time where if you can just park your own expectations, maybe flying the flag's not a bad thing. We'll have a chat about that after this. Good on you, Steph. 1-300-736-736. If you want to talk cricket, send through your SMS is 0433981116. A lot of people loved your work. Somebody wrote through before. I'm a cranky old tragic. Just loved your work and your input, Mel, through the first test. You're absolutely fantastic, Mel. A real breath of fresh air. Thanks for a great test. And somebody else, 35 catches, a world record, according to statisticians who follow these things.
Yep.
So there you go. What do you reckon the chances of that are, of people falling in line with this Australian team? And
impossible, because there's just some people out there that, like our caller, he even said himself he's a little bit cranky. I'm not saying he's certainly not negative, but there's just people who love to have a swipe all the time. Mm. But it would be amazing, wouldn't it, if the entire nation said, and all the cricket fans out there just said, for this next test, all we are saying is nothing but positive comments and vibes. This team would walk a hell of a lot taller. And it'd be interesting just to see how they would feed off that in comparison to, you know, the reasonably constant questioning over form and you know, a variety of different things.
Good luck.
Yeah, no, it's impossible.
It won't happen. I mean, the minute, you know, the temptation, people have got the tweets already penned, ready to send.
Yeah.
If Sean Marsh fails, they can't wait to lend their voice to the chorus of hatred towards him. But if we just decided to resist the need, the internal need to vent that thought for just for a week, I wonder what, if it would have any sort of sense of feeling. Do you get a sense from the players that
they're
aware of how people are feeling about
it's
them
more
and the
so,
team?
Yeah, it's more so like post-match, you go down onto the ground and the team will put up, you know, a number of players for all the multitude of networks that are on the ground between the two TVs and three radios. But you get, as soon as you start the interview, and I had five different ones over the test, they start off just a little bit wary is probably the word I'd use to begin with, because I think they're not sure of where the media is going to go with questions about everything. And then, you know, you can have a bit of a laugh with a couple of the guys, and then that, you can see them sort of relax as they sort of go, oh, okay, well, it's all right.
We're past that.
Yeah. You know what I mean? You're sort of almost looking at them as if to say, it's okay.
I'm on your side.
Yeah.
I'm here with you, you know?
That's it. And it's not to say that, you know, you don't ask poignant questions on the day's play. You still got to cover all that off. But I think it's just ways of asking it and ways of allowing them just to relax a little bit.
Because
we want to see their natural personality and persona come through. And I don't think we get to see that as much when they're under the pump.
Oh, of course not. So before we get a break out of the line, I'll talk to you about two individuals. I want to talk to you about Glenn Maxwell and Elise Perry before we get to the top of the hour. We had a chat about this on the show yesterday. It's probably too late to change. This quick turnaround makes it hard to change the 11. Would you change the 11? And part B of the question is, what would you make any changes to the order of the 11 that goes out to bat in the second test?
They've picked the squad. They're going to stick with it. And I think that was the biggest issue right at the start of the series is just to find some continuity within the team. If you keep swapping and changing things, that is just a recipe for disaster. Yes, someone might be able to come in and do okay, but the chopping and changing just unsettles things so very much. So the way up then is between an 11 feeling as if they've got the backing of the coach and the captain and the selectors to say, you're right for these two tests in comparison to, one or two of them not coming through with the goods with battle ball. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. We'll know at the end of the Perth test of that. But I think for this group of players at the moment, sticking with that 11 is going to be key.
And are you staying with Finchie at the top of the order? Are you thinking about that much in your quiet moments?
As soon as I think about Finch moving, it shifts so many other pieces, doesn't it? So Sean Marsh got runs in the second innings, played well. He moves around. Khawaja moves up. There's all those other little bits and bobs as well. And I think when you talk continuity, it's not just in the 11 playing, but also in the position. So
leave it as
and that's
is.
Why I think, yeah, that's why I think Langer will stick with it. I'm sure they would have spoken quite in depth about it. Yeah. And I think the other person probably in the equation is Aaron Finch himself. Yeah. We've spoken about him. I think everyone knows, even if you don't know him, you get the sense that he's just a good bloke and he'll do anything
of
for
course.
The team.
I've got no doubt.
And he probably won't be helping the scenario, probably just saying, look, I'll bat wherever.
Yeah.
But I think almost like the review, he's just got to say, I'm opening, I want to open, give it to me.
I keep, when we have this micro conversation about Finch and where he should bat, it's impossible for me to not stray or not forget Andrew McDonald and Victoria and Aaron Finch and Red Ball Cricket.
Mm-hmm.
There. They love him in the team, but they don't like him opening.
Yep.
They think that he's better, two or three spots below the opening pair. And it's not as if it's without precedent, Finch v Red Ball in white clothes batting in the middle of the order.
Yep.
So here we are, one team that he plays for knows him pretty well, Victoria, bats him at 4 or 5.
Yep.
The other team, Australia, who he hasn't spent a lot of time playing Red Ball cricket for, opens him. And so you've got this, even within the context of Australian cricket, you've got two very different views.
Because it's two different scenarios. We're talking about Aaron Finch, the individual, as the player, better suited in the middle. And then we've got the Australian team and what is needed at this point in time.
That's a really good point.
And I think at this point in time, they feel that Aaron Finch
we're needing to be an opener.
Better at the top of the order.
Last one before we get to a break, talking about negativity and the impact that it has on individuals. Interesting text message, and I haven't got the name alongside it, so I apologise, you haven't put your name on it, but huge Shane Watson fan, had a great career, but I truly believe all the negativity stunted his career. We do need to get around these boys, says the author of that text message.
Yeah, Shane Watson's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I watched him and he frustrated me great. He is also one of the nicest blokes going around.
Yep.
You're right. You almost absorb all the negativity and frustration and you just pop it on the player rather than actually going, well, I'm frustrated, but the best thing for this guy to, to feel the love is to actually, hear it a little bit more.
He was.
We actually had a poll during the test on...
I heard this. I did.
On players that polarise people.
Yes.
I think Watto was... he was in the 11.
He was. Yeah. And a damn fine cricketer. Like, at his best, he was...
See, look out for him in the Big Bash this year too.
Yeah.
He's still trucking along very, very nicely.
We'll get a break. In fact, Jack's on the road before we get to a break talk about Elise Perry and Glenn Maxwell, amongst a couple of other things before we say goodbye to you, Mel. Good afternoon to you, Jack.
G'day, Mel and Andy. I'm just wondering, like, I watched Channel 7 last week at the start of the test. They tossed the coin and everything like that. And then as soon as the toss was over, Ishiguro is going to talk to the captains. You don't hear that anymore because Foxtel's doing it. You know, with Channel 7 and the footy and stuff, they work together, you know. With the cricket, I think it's, it'd be nice to see the interview of the captains at the start of the game on Channel 7, but they don't do it because Foxtel's got it.
Yeah, I think there was actually a little bit of a muck-up behind the scenes as well. So I think moving forward, you might be able to listen in. Don't quote me on that, though.
I think we saw Isha doing the post-match interviews that I think, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I was watching it mostly on 7.
Yeah.
And I think we saw
Isha. I'll let you off.
Yeah, sorry. It's a very good point. I spent a lot of time listening to the call in the car, Mel. I heard a lot of time. I heard the one about the – I heard a lot. But I was watching it at home at the start. I've got, you know.
It's okay.
But I think we did see Isha's post-match interviews
on 7.
So
on 7, which is through Fox. Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a few balls in the air that need to be juggled their way through on this one.
Yeah, and I think, as I mentioned before, there's five broadcasters out on the ground between the two TVs, three radios, and it was the first test. I think things will certainly settle down a little bit for the second.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get a break out of the way. Glenn Maxwell's taking a captaincy position with the Melbourne Stars. I want to talk to you about where Glenn Maxwell fits in the scheme of things. But first up, I want to talk about Elise Perry. We've got a bit to talk about regarding her. Join in that conversation if you want. 1-300-736-736.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Afternoons with Andy Marr.
Grab the new hot and spicy buffalo chicken from Subway. And the massive redemption sale. Makita, when power means business.
1-300-736-736. If you want to cast an opinion on what you've seen from Elise Perry thus far in WBBL4 and just how good she is going at the moment, I'd love to hear from you. We spent a lot of time, Mel Jones, in a commentary booth watching Elise Perry and watching her at the top of the order with a real dasher, beautiful complementary partnership.
Yeah.
But she's become the dasher now.
She has, hasn't she?
She has.
It's been really impressive. I remember last year for WBBL, and you could not believe it.
I couldn't believe it.
Leading run scorer for the competition, and Lisa Stalak and I didn't pick her in our
team of the year.
Mm. Strike rate issues. Like, I think she just nudged 100.
Oh, I don't know whether she did. Like, she may have. Okay, it was close, yep.
Every other opening bat, 2-3, all up around that 130 mark. So we just said for the T20 game, you might be able to hit the runs, but you've got to do them in a decent clip. And that's what Brendan McCullum, he'll always say, he'll take a strike rate player over an average player any day of the week. Because of that strike rate issue, she then batted 7 for Australia and has done for the last 12 months in the World Cup as well. Her bowling actually has improved at the side as well. But I reckon she's gone away and she's like, no, I like playing at the top of the order and I want to bat higher for Australia. So if I'm going to bat higher for Australia, I need to go to Good Clip and WBBL. And she's just come out and gone boom.
So 58 off 40, 102 not out off 59, 74 not out off 66. It's remarkable that somebody who is so established and so good, you know, in her chosen sport, can actually find at 27
another level. Yeah.
Particularly somebody who, and tell me about Elise Perry. She's always struck me as being somebody who is such a hard worker and very serious about her sport.
Meticulous. Meticulous is the word that comes to mind.
It's a great word. The numbers, I'm not going to say the numbers matter, but protecting her wicket matters. She doesn't want to get out. She wants to stay in the middle. She thinks that's where she's most valuable. But something is, she's unlocked something in her brain, I reckon, somewhere that is, and she's not getting out, you know, but she's now going at that 130, 140, 150 that you're talking about that is now seemingly more important than a healthy batting average.
I think it's almost like she's just realised that she's an exceptional player, which means that she can expand her game and still not go out. Mm. And whether that probably hasn't been any specific skill improvement. That's just above the shoulders. And I'm not too sure who she's worked specifically with on that. But it might have just been someone saying, just back yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
You can hit the ball pretty much to any part of the ground off any bowler that's coming on. just let yourself go and see what happens.
So,
and,
so she's getting better, right? Like those numbers say she's having a fantastic start to this tournament, but she looks like she's a more... There's an ease about her at something at the moment. There's something relaxed about her that...
There's a switch in there that's just been... There's an enjoyment factor when I'm watching her on the ground now.
She's just up and about,
you know, even off the ground, post games, if you bump into the hotel, there's just a little bit of a different Elise Perry.
Yeah. Do you think, as we sit here now, is the bat ahead of the... We've had this conversation on the way through occasionally. Is the bat ahead of the ball now in the women's game, the T20 version of it?
Yes.
Is the gap wider now than it might have been 12 months ago, do you think, in terms of the... Just gut feel sort of overview without...
The gap certainly hasn't diminished in any sense. And it's tough too because we keep going on about pitches, and the pitches that they're providing are fantastic for T20 cricket. So the pitches, the grounds that the players are playing on now, the redevelopment of the Junction Oval to North Sydney, they're absolutely perfect for T20 cricket. The bowlers do need to... find a way now. And a couple of first round, did I see as many slower balls, change-ups, bowling into the wicket? Probably not as much.
Yeah. So will they be more effective? Will those out of the back of the hand, you know, slower ball, change-up deliveries you're talking about, will they be even more effective if we can find more women who can get it up to 115, 120? If we can just find another... Because I feel like the batting's improved, let's just say 10 or 15%. So a player and a half per team, they're deepening out, maybe even more. Are you seeing the evolution of female bowlers that can get it through, just can hurry it on to players a bit more routinely?
Yeah, so we've got Taylor Vallemic coming through. So she was clocking around at 124. Leah Tahuhu for the Renegades. So those two in that team have got the fastest pace bowling attack. I think it comes down to... You and I, we played backyard cricket a lot, didn't we?
Mm.
And I started off as a bowler.
Yeah.
Bowling is one of the most unique actions in the sporting world. Like, it's stupid, bizarre.
It's crazy.
So if you don't grow up doing it, it becomes a slightly more difficult art rather than having a bat in your hand and hitting something. That becomes very natural. People do that sort of all the time. Because you're playing tennis, you're playing softball. And I think that's the difference. In 10 years' time, I think with all the participation programs and all those sorts of things, and younger girls bowling at an earlier age and being really comfortable with it, and then the likes of Elise Perry and Leah Tahuhu going around and girls going, I want to bowl.
I can do that.
Yeah. And I think, what's the top end? Probably 130,
yep.
I reckon.
Yep.
But if every team had a 130 bowler in their side, that's entertaining stuff.
Yeah, it changes
the game because you're hurrying batters up. They're ducking and weaving. The ball's pinging off it a lot faster.
Yep.
And I reckon you could put a program out. Let's find our 130 bowler.
Oh yeah. I agree.
Let's scour the country. Yep. Who wants to bowl 130? And you know what? If someone comes through and bowls 130 in the next couple of years, they'll be a millionaire.
Yeah. There you go. There's the challenge. If you're listening and you're out there, go find one. Let's get a break out of the way. We're going to have about 4 or 5 minutes on the other side of it. I want you to join in. I'll get your thoughts on this, Mel. 1-300-736-736. Where does Glenn Maxwell fit? Where does he fit in the game right now? He wants to still play Test cricket for Australia. Where's Glenn Maxwell's place in the grand scheme? He's going to be captain of the Melbourne Stars. Enormously gifted player, we know that. Where does he fit? If you've got a view on that, we want to hear from you on the other side of the break.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Afternoons with Andy Marr.
Grab the new hot and spicy buffalo chicken from Subway and the massive redemption sale. Makita, when power means business.
So, Mel, we've only got a couple of minutes left with you. Back page of the Herald Sun, Sam Landsberg has done a sit-down piece with Glenn Maxwell, who has gone to lengths with Sam to say, I've turned my back on IPL, I'm burning money because I want to do what I need to do. And this is how it comes across. So I apologise to Maxie if it's not the way it was intended, but I want to do everything I possibly can to get back into the Australian Test side. And he's going to captain the Stars this year. Where does Glenn Maxwell best fit in the Australian... Well, no, not best fit. That's the wrong thing. Where does he fit in the Australian scheme of things?
On the outskirts at the moment. I'm trying to figure out how he gets back in. Well, weight of runs and wickets, that's certainly it. So he'll go across to England during the county season, try and... bring that form back to the start of the Shield season for next year, or potentially even with the Ashes on over there, yep. be hitting runs and be there.
We've seen that happen in the past.
Certainly yep. have. But for Maxie, it feels, and this is just a gut feel from an outsider looking in, that it is more than just weight of runs and wickets and the way in which he plays the game. And I don't have anything to back that up just looking and feeling that it just he needs to do something else to get back in the good books.
It's interesting, this notion that it just doesn't – a player that doesn't fit, he's a bit different, you know. He's just a bit kooky or a bit loose or a bit crazy or – he's just not, he just doesn't quite fit. And we were talking before about, you know, how much Justin Langer wants to build this dynamic within the group.
Yeah.
Having said that and taking all of that on board, if you've got a talent that is going to make the side better, but he's a bit different, a bit left of centre.
You work with that.
It's sort of on them.
That's your job, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Really,
you know?
At the end of the day, most players get through to the Australian level now, having been coached, they've got their own, you know, personal coaches, batting coaches, bowling coaches and the like. Now, Justin Langer will certainly do a little bit of technical stuff as well, but basically his job is this man management role of the 11, the immediate squad, and then everyone else around that squad to make sure that everyone knows their game plans, know their place, all those sorts of things. So, yeah. They've got to... It would be, I think, it'd just be awful if we've had this talent that we do in Glenn Maxwell, and we don't get the best out of it in all forms of
cricket.
Is he
good enough? Forget about numbers. Is he? We've got 27, 36. Is he good enough to play to be a member of the Australian Test side?
Yes, he is.
Yep.
Yes, without a doubt.
Well, there's the challenge, isn't it? Find a way, you know, unless there's somebody else who's...
And it's both sides too. I'm not putting it all on one side.
No, of course. Yeah. And we are obsessed with having an all-rounder in our team. And there's one standing right in front of you on the back page of the Herald Sun today. Beautiful and resplendent in green. Good luck over in Perth.
Thanks heaps. Looking forward to it.
It was great. Test one. It's going to be awesome.
Shout out to everyone. Yeah, keep involved during the test matches where we love your calls.
Make sure you tune in. Mel Jones is going to be part of it again. That, of course, starts on Friday afternoon. Have a safe trip over there.
Thanks, mate.
Coming up to the top of the hour, a whole lot of stuff to get through on the other side. We're going to catch up with Corey on the side, will you?